see. It will be a five-week course of study. The first week today, actually, we'll be going through a background and overview of 2 Timothy. Then we will get into the four chapters. There's four chapters within the 2 Timothy book. Next weekend, however, we will take a reprieve from my class as we will have Mike Wilk here to do some preaching. And so we'll wait until the following week, which will be great because I'll have now 2 weeks to get two chapters completely done, and that will be great. Plus, it will be fantastic to see Mike again and to hear his lessons. So again, 5 weeks, four chapters, and we will share those together. All right, so today, my plan with you is to go through some background and some overview of the book of 2 Timothy. But before we do that, and Bob, you can be a participant in this, obviously. Who can tell me about 1 Timothy? Give me a summary of 1 Timothy. Everybody look at Bob. So give me a summary of 1 Timothy. What do you remember? And Bob is totally counting on you to know this. So it's one tidbit. Okay. Okay. Certainly that was kind of happening, wasn't it? You know, certainly a specific charge to Timothy with regard to those kind of things. What else? He's kind of a young guy, right? And all of us who are male in this audience at one point were young guys. And so we remember what it was like to be a young guy, and especially a young guy in the presence of maybe older persons who have been on the earth longer than we have. And then maybe our character comes into play. Certainly we learn that from Timothy. So, all right, well, let's do just a real quick review, very quick review, brief review of 1 Timothy. So we understand and we know that the author of that particular book, Paul, as Bob went through with you, and he also demonstrated that there are those who want to pick on things and seem to think that Paul maybe wasn't the author. We know that Paul was the author. We believe that Paul was the author. When, perhaps, around 64 to 66 A.D. Time important in some studies. In some studies, not so important. Where? Bob mentioned, you know, in Rome, perhaps in Rome, perhaps in Macedonia. There's a mixed bag of where ultimately he was writing 1 Timothy. Perhaps Rome, perhaps Macedonia. And then obviously his audience was Timothy. So Paul had left Timothy a great and awesome responsibility when he was in Ephesus. We know that there were those who were teaching and preaching contrary to sound doctrine. We know that. And so Timothy had his work cut out for him. Now we know that Paul really wanted to be there with Timothy, but understood that it may not happen. And so he was writing to Timothy to encourage him, to instruct Timothy on how to conduct himself while administering the affairs of the church, and to encourage Timothy by providing counsel concerning his own spiritual progress. So there was a lot going on with Paul and Timothy, and certainly in the church of Ephesus. And so in terms of a theme and a key verse, I kind of, you know, based on that class that Bob taught, I really kind of thought the theme was sound doctrine for a congregation and its preacher. Would you agree? That could be a theme. There's not any one true, perfect, this is the theme, but it is a theme. And certainly I think we could apply that towards 1 Timothy. And then in terms of a key verse, I chose 1 Timothy 3:14 and 15. These things I write to you, though I hope to come to you shortly, but if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth. Now, we're going to get into that particular verse once we get to chapter 3, because I find it really interesting, the term, the pillar and the ground of truth, because it's going to be brought up again in 2 Timothy to a certain extent. But I want to touch on that when we get there. And so now that leads us to 2 Timothy. And through background on 2 Timothy, but one of the things that I would like to do together this afternoon or this morning as well is, how well do you know Paul?
How well do you know Timothy? Who knows me? Seriously, who do you know me? I mean, everybody, I think, in this room, that my name is Mark, last name is Dahl. Now you all know me. Okay? How many of you know me pretty intimately? Not very many, right? How many of you know what keeps me awake at night and stresses me out? Now we're even down to less people, right? But the more that you know somebody, the more that you understand his or her character, the more you begin to know that person, especially as a Christian, their faith. And so what I want to do this morning with you, after the first part of going through the overview and the background, is I want to spend some time together to help us to get to know Paul on a much deeper level, especially as it relates to prison. Okay? Yep. The writer is Paul. He's writing to Timothy, but it's important for us to get some pretty deep background in terms of Paul, so that we understand just who this man is. So Timothy was the last, 2 Timothy was the last of the epistles that Paul wrote. You knew that, right? That this was the last epistle. So when you think about it, you know, it's really easy to say, well, it's the last epistle, and then we move on. Down into the chronological of the Bible, we move on. But this is the last book that he ever wrote, at least that we know of. It is the last one. And so that means something. It certainly meant something to Paul, and it certainly meant something to Timothy, and no doubt it means something to us as well. And it was penned during Paul's second imprisonment in Rome. We know back in Acts chapter 8 that he was in Rome for the first time, a little bit different circumstances than in the second imprisonment that we will talk about today specifically. And he was now more restricted and realized that his time on this earth is coming to an end. Okay? I think he really, really understood that this is probably going to be it. And so he was very anxious not only to communicate with Timothy, but to see him. And so we will show that, and we will get into that when we later in the chapters. And so the authorship and background, a little bit of background. So if you didn't know, sometime around AD 64, there was a great fire in Rome. You may know that. And if you can imagine Rome at the time, and then a large portion of Rome burning, that is tremendous. And so the question is, well, how did that fire start? Well, the flavor of the day was, what was the Christians? It was the Christians who started that fire, but there were rumors that were whispered, and there's some credibility to this, that it was actually the Emperor Nero. We know who Nero was, kind of a crazy, very brutal, very cruel, very violent individual, one who was beginning to go a little bit on the insane side. And so rumors whispered that it was Nero who started that fire. And then, of course, to cover up his bad deed that he did, he blames it on the Christians. Right? And how easy is that to do, given what was going on at the time? And so from that time on, if you were a Christian in Rome, it was always a little challenging to preach and to teach. But now, if you were a Christian in Rome, it became downright dangerous. And so there was that to contend with at the time. Paul was arrested again then after this in around AD 66. And many who could have come to his defense refused to do so out of fear for their life. I get that. I mean, how would you react in a very volatile situation that was taking place in Rome at the time? How would you react? And we'll see how Paul reacts to most, and we'll see how Paul reacts to some. But the fact of the matter remains that there were those who could have come to his defense, but just didn't. Okay? And he does speak to that. Paul boldly rose up on his own defense during this time. During this second imprisonment, this trial, he rose up to his own defense and was relatively successful. so successful such that they decided to go ahead and to look further into the accusations that were levied against Paul. And they did. But his circumstances were now far less pleasant than his first imprisonment in Rome. During his first imprisonment, we know that he was able to stay at his own house. We know that he was able to see friends. We know that he was really able to just preach and teach at his doing. And there was really nothing that prohibited him from doing so. And so we contrast that then to this second time in Rome, in a prison in Rome. And he was actually confined in prison, virtually alone, except for being with other criminals. And we are going to spend some time on that prison here in just a little bit. And it was under these circumstances, and that's the point I want to try to really hit home this morning, is under these circumstances. Well, you're asked the question, well, what are the circumstances? Okay, so let me ask the question. How many in this room have ever been in prison? I don't know, can I ask that question? Maybe I should ask that question. But if you ask somebody, have you ever been in prison, and then they say yes, aren't you kind of curious what it was like for them? Now, I happen to know a few people who have been in prison, in jail and in prison, right? And albeit not at all the very best place to be, boy, not too bad, right? I mean, you hear about what is afforded to people in prison and in jail, and aside from their freedom being pretty much taken away, it's not really too bad. It's not good, but it's not too bad. But under the circumstances that Paul was now in prison for the second time is very important. And I want to take you through, together, deeper, that circumstance that Paul was in. So the purpose of the letter was written to request Timothy's presence in Rome and to warn him against false teachers and to encourage him in his duties and to strengthen him, a lot like in 1 Timothy, but even more so now, given that this was close to the end of Paul's life, right? Knowing what was happening with the persecution of the Christians, even more so now, he needed preachers, he needed teachers to do that work and to be strong and steadfast in that work. And Paul has several reasons for writing this letter to Timothy, and I just kind of broke him down into three broad categories. First, you know, he wished to comfort him and encourage him to remain loyal and to remain diligent. And so part of the letter in 2 Timothy is to encourage Timothy. You know, as Lee said, he was a young man. And facing those circumstances that he did, how easy would it have been to say, I am so done with this. I can't do this. This is too much for me. And so part of it was to encourage Timothy. Some of it was prompted by his deep loneliness. Can you imagine being in the situations that Paul was in? And we'll talk about a few of those. But now he is in this prison alone, and supposedly it was kind of hard for one of his followers to even find him. And so, of course, Paul was a man. He's a person, a human being, who feels that sense of loneliness, especially for a brother or a sister. He's going to feel that, like we would. He's going to feel that. And thirdly, he also had physical needs. In 2 Timothy, he talks about the need for a cloak that he had left behind, and some parchment, and some other things, some other effects that he really wanted to have. And Timothy could bring those to him on his way to Rome. Okay, now, there's other content, obviously, but these are some of the reasons why Paul wrote to Timothy. It also offered an opportunity for Paul to speak about his time that he served the Lord and what he did and how he did it. It has a unique appeal as it is the last recorded Remember, this is the last recorded letter that Paul had written. And so it will come to a conclusion, and Paul, the physical Paul, will be no more. And that will be it in terms of the physical Paul. And it is not really known whether or not, I couldn't really find anything that Paul actually did see Timothy one more time. Many of us have been in that situation where we've had people we loved who were in the process of dying, and we desperately tried to get to them before that happened, and sometimes we would see them before they died, other times we did not. So imagine, again, it's easy to say, yeah, maybe Paul never saw Timothy, or maybe Timothy never saw Paul again. But understand emotionally what that feels like. We do. We can. And it's important for us to emotionally put ourselves into that situation, because it gives us then a deeper understanding of both the writer and the recipient. So it was initially written shortly before Paul's death in Rome, between somewhere around 65 to 67. We know that Nero committed suicide sometime in around AD 68, so it was most likely before that. So that's kind of the leading thought, is between those dates. Again, date studies are important in some situations, and in some situations, they're just dates. Okay, but at least we understand that there was a range there. And so what I've done is I've put up for you, and it might be a little challenging to see, I don't know why I've tried to squeeze this in on one slide, but there it is. This is the outline, or a outline. There's a billion of them out there. I created this one because it worked for me, right? And we will follow this to a certain extent. Remember, we've got four chapters to go through. I might not do all of a chapter. I might do some of a chapter, and then the next time we'll do the rest of the chapter, and then some of the next, you know, right? So here is a bit of an outline that you know, we will kind of follow. And so the major topic points, you can see greetings and thanksgiving. Why do we always have to talk about those? Well, there's some important pieces in there as well, right? I used to ask, why do we always talk about their greetings? You know, okay, you're saying hi. You know, it's what we do. But sometimes it's the how, and sometimes it's the why, and sometimes it's the way, and sometimes it's the words. And so it is important, right? And so number two, perseverance of a man of God. And so you can see the minor points underneath that. We'll talk about that, certainly. Then number three, patterns of a man of God. That's kind of an important one. We'll spend some time in this. It's interesting that Paul spends that much time talking about examples of a man of God. Right? What we will learn is, well, wait a minute, is this going to be just about ministers and churches? Is there application to us in 2 Timothy? And absolutely there is application to us. And we'll talk about that together. How can I, male or female, apply this to my life? And so we'll talk about that too. Number four, perils of a man of God. Number five, the preaching of a man of God. And then some concluding remarks, and then Paul's farewell. It just seems so strange, doesn't it? When you spend time with a person, and in this case, we spend time with Paul, not only in the book of Acts, but certainly in 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy and others as well. We spend time with Paul, but now we are in the last book. We're in Paul's final swan song, if you will. And this will be it for the physical Paul. All right, everybody doing okay? Yeah? I see nodding heads. I see smiling faces. I don't see any eyelids that are closed, so it's good. So let's go to prison. And so then I put the, what? You know, because then you're always asking the question, well, why? What are you doing, Mark? Why are we going to prison? Well, we have to go to prison. We need to go to prison. We need to understand Paul differently than maybe what we have before. And it's important to do that, as I mentioned. I just wrote something down here. To know one's hardships and perseverance through them is to truly begin to know that person's character, to know that person's dedication, and to know that person's faith. That makes sense. We can appreciate that. All of us in this room at some point in our life have faced something that did not seem possible to face. And yet, we persevered through it. And so then, when you begin to share that and understand that about that person, you see them a little differently. And that's a good thing sometimes. And it's the same thing, I think, with Paul. And why it's so important for us in this particular case, on this particular day, to really understand his relationship with prisons. If you think about it, Paul was in prison a lot, right? And so what does that do to you? And how do you keep going when that happens? And so that's what I want to spend a little time with. I meant to have this ready, so just bear with me. I had everything else ready, and of course, I didn't have this part ready, and that is, I need to read this. So I'm going to do that really quick. I'll get my iPad open because it makes me be able to see things really, really well, and then we'll begin, and I will read this. And so, if you want to follow along with me, turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and I'm going to start at verse 22. And so this is Paul speaking to the Corinthians about false apostles. And what's interesting is that you begin to hear the tone in Paul's voice, and you almost hear some sarcasm as well. And I think that that was probably appropriate for the message that Paul was trying to deliver to those who was listening to him, and certainly to those who were boasting about how good they were, about what they did, and who were very contrary to the Word of God. And so Paul says, are they Hebrews? Well, so am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus 1. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned, and 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness, in toil, in sleeplessness, often, in hunger, in thirst, in fasting, often in cold, in nakedness. Wow, that's tremendous. I mean, can you imagine going through that and what you might be like coming out the other side? And yet Paul has been through it all. He has been through it all, including upon and before his conversion, understanding that what he was doing and thinking that he was following Christ was not. Could you imagine that realization coupled with everything that he just mentions now? Certainly we know that he had been in prison. We know this. We know he'd been in prison in Caesarea, in Jerusalem, in Philippi, and certainly in Rome twice. Here he is on the second occasion in Rome in prison. We know that. And again, back to his first imprisonment, I want to kind of compare and contrast the first imprisonment and second imprisonment. The second imprisonment, in 2 Timothy, it doesn't really go into a lot of detail about his imprisonment, only that it was way worse than his first. In Acts 28, verses 30 and 31, then Paul dwelt 2 whole years in his own rented house and received all who came to him, preaching the kingdom of God and teaching the things which concerned the Lord Jesus Christ with all confidence, no one forbidding him. So this, I guess if you have to be in prison, this is the way that you would want it to be.
And I guess to a certain extent, one might compare Paul's first run of imprisonment with some of the imprisonment today. Right? Not too bad. Still not the very best, but not too bad. Right?
And so that was his first imprisonment. So let's talk a little bit about the purpose of Roman prisons. And so if you do a study, it's really interesting actually. Some of it is very violent and some of it is very base. But it is very interesting. There were purposes for Roman prisons. In Rome, throwing somebody in prison was not a legal recognized penalty. You know, for us, that's a penalty. You get convicted of a crime and it's prison worthy, you're going to prison, that's the penalty. In Rome at the time, that was not a recognized legal penalty to throw somebody in a prison that we think of a prison, a holding cell. Okay? Yep, still took place, but it wasn't recognized as a legal penalty. Typically, they were to be used to hold criminals awaiting trial to see what happens further or to find out what their punishment would be. It was just a temporary holding place. Sometimes they were used to really kind of quell uprisings, because certainly those happened with an oppressive government. They happened. And so they would take the instigators and they would put them in prison and hold them indefinitely until whenever. And it usually wasn't too good for the people in prison, especially if it was against Rome. But that sometimes they would do that in terms of cooling down that particular uprising. In Rome, there were really four types or kinds of prisons. I didn't know this, but there were. One type was slavery. It was considered to be a prison term, that you would be subscribed into slavery for a month or for the rest of your life. That seems pretty penalty to me. But slavery was one form of prison. The gladiatorial games, we've all understood and come to know what that means and who those people were. Typically they were the miscreants, the slaves, people that were captured in other countries, would be used and then trained to fight in the gladiator games. Or they were put on galleys and ships to be used as people who would oar the boat or take care of the boat. Those were forms of prison terms and sentences and prisons in the Roman times. And certainly there were the holding cells. And it's in this last category of prison type that we find Paul, in a holding cell. Not like his first Roman imprisonment that we learn about in Acts 28. And so there it is. We are going to talk a little bit about Marmatine Prison. This is most likely the prison that Paul was held in for his last time here on earth before what we believe is his execution and subsequent beheading. This is most likely where Paul was staying while he was there. This prison, the Marmatine prison, is often referred to as the Tullianum. The Tullianum. I'll say that a little slower. Tullianum dungeon. It was constructed sometime about 600 years before Christ by one of the Caesars. His name was Annus Marcus. And it was constructed originally to be a cistern, something to carry and hold water. And over time, as better water features were built in Rome, then this actually became a site of a quarry. And then ultimately it became a prison. And it was a very unique prison because its earlier cistern construction, you'll notice at the top of that what looks like, where they have natural lighting. Oh, that's lovely, right? That's not natural lighting. I mean, there's light, obviously. That was how you got into the prison. They would lower you through a manhole, and that's how you actually got into the prison, and then there was no other way out. Well, there was, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. But then it became known as Marmontine Prison. Again, this is where we think Paul most likely would have been held. And so here's a couple more pictures. I'm going to leave these up for a little while. And you can kind of see these are actual pictures. They look a little distorted here on the screen, but actual pictures of the Marmontine Prison down at least in the Tullianum level, which is the dungeon. Okay? So stone. There's not a lot of features here. There's not a lot of nice things about this place. This is the hole that you would get dropped through when you were brought here to prison. And so I wanted to know as much as I could in terms of what it would have been like to be in this prison and what kind of things were typical about being in this prison. Because what we know is that Paul was in prison here, we believe, I believe, and that things were not pleasant for him. But what does that mean? And so what I did is I found a couple of references that I want to read for you. One involves a historian reference back in the days of Bible times, and then another more modern discussion, somebody who was actually there and took a tour of that particular prison. And I thought, I just am going to read this to you. And then I have some thoughts of my own that I wrote out that I want to read to you as well. So I'm going to leave this up while I read this. The prison itself was essentially two large rooms on different levels with iron shackles fixed to the walls. The lower chamber was the Tullianum, or Tullian dungeon. The Roman historian Sallust, writing a century before Paul, said of this dungeon, "It is sunk about 12 feet underground. Walls secure it on every side, and over it is a vaulted roof connected with stone arches, but its appearance is disgusting and horrible by reason of filth, darkness, and stench. Lighting was indeed poor, primarily coming from the torches or oil lamps. The guards might have had fires to provide heat in the winter or to cook food. These guards were usually soldiers. Being a prison guard was not an appealing job and was often given to the poorest soldiers. Some of the guards were cruel, and prisoners, particularly ones not Roman, were defenseless. Under Roman law, if a prisoner escaped, the guard was executed. This tended to make the guards cautious about their wards, to say the least. Prisoners were manacled using different lengths of chain, probably reflecting the security risk, the nature of the accusation, and the attitude of the guards. A short chain could hold a prisoner continually upright, depending upon others solely for everything. A longer chain might permit a prisoner to take a step or two from the wall and to sit or lie down. Some prisoners were placed in stocks and their ankles held apart. These persons were forced to sit on the same filthy spot continuously. And so in the more modern day description, Marmontine Prison is a dungeon in the ground, literally a circular pit about 30 feet in diameter, with a hole at the top a little larger than that of a manhole in the street. That was the place of incarceration for criminals at the time of the Apostle Paul. That prison today has atop of it a building, and to see the prison, you climb the stairs, enter the building, and you're given a little bit of a tour. You look through the hole, and you can see the pit underneath with its stone floor and stone walls in the shape of a circle. We were then allowed to go down into the pit and found there just a couple of things of interest. First of all, there was an altar built there by some Roman Catholics at some point in history. And then against one section of that circular pit, there was a door, a great large door, that was able to be pulled up and then dropped back down in place. The guide instructed us concerning the altar, which had been built in somewhat recent centuries, and then told us that the door was basically there for execution purposes. That it was common to place prisoners, dropping them through the hole into the dungeon, up to about 30 to 35 prisoners. And then, in order to make room for the next group of criminals, the door would be pulled open, and running alongside that cell was the city sewage system of Rome. As the door was pulled open, the cell or dungeon would fill with the sewage and drown all of the prisoners and wash them back out. The door would be then shut, the place would be drained, and ready for another 30 to 35 criminals. And so you begin to see that this is not a hospitable place. This is not in any way, shape, or form like the prison that Paul was in his first imprisonment in Rome. And so that's why we go to prison, to understand his character towards the churches. In 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 27, I have worked hard and long, enduring many sleepless nights. I have been hungry and thirsty, and have often gone without food. I have shivered in the cold without enough clothing to keep me warm. Then, besides all of that, I have the daily burden of my concern for all the churches. In a very public display of hatred for the Christ he taught and the gospel he preached, he was not drowned in sewage. He was taken out of that place, and his head was placed on a block, and an axe cut it off his body. And publicly, the Romans said, "We will not tolerate the teaching of Jesus Christ, nor anyone who represents him." And when you can think back and imagine the life of the Apostle Paul, life of self-sacrifice on the behalf of the spread of the gospel, the life of a man who lived literally to communicate the greatest message the world has ever heard in order that men might know joy and grace and mercy and forgiveness and peace. When you imagine that that's how he ended his life, it seems like such a tragic and ungrateful expression of a man's response. What an unjust reward for an innocent man, not just an innocent man, but a man who had brought the good news of salvation to the very people who took his life. All of this he endured, selflessly, sacrificing his life and any comfort that anyone might assume to be just basic for the sake of reaching people with the wonderful good news of salvation in Jesus Christ. And this is how it ends. In a stinking, dark, damp, unsanitary pit in the ground, occupied by a bunch of criminals behind him. And so he is there because of a furious wave of persecution. Leading Christians have been arrested. Many have been executed, and Paul, of course, is next. As we come to 2 Timothy, that's the scene in which we find the Apostle Paul sitting in the dungeon. His liberty of a few years has ended, and he is back in the most difficult incarceration of his life. And in that dungeon, he sets out to write the last letter he ever wrote, and he wrote it to Timothy. And so that's why we go to prison, to understand his character towards Timothy. You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is Christ Jesus. And the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Now do you understand a little better what it might have been like for Paul to be in this prison and to know what he had to go through and endure in a way that we can never imagine, cannot possibly imagine. And yet,
his concern for the churches, his concern for the well-being of his son in the faith, Timothy. What a great man. What a man. What an amazing man. When I think, Mark, could you do that? Could you stay strong all of those years? Is your faith even a fraction of what Paul's is? And it helps me. And I hope that it helps all of us, that we get deeper into this man, Paul, and how he was in prison. Okay. Thoughts? Questions? Comments? I won't take you to prison again. All right, so next, not next week. We will have 2 weeks before you see me again up here. We will delve into chapter 1, and we will make it through all of chapter 1 for sure on that day. I appreciate the time and attention. Look forward to our continued study. Think about what you have learned today as you continue to read through 2 Timothy. Read it a couple of times. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to have study questions for you. You might use them, you might not. That's your choice. But I'm going to go ahead and provide those to the congregation, and we'll see you in 2 Timothy in a couple of weeks.